Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Hello and welcome to Africa Link. It's Monday, April 23rd, 2018. I'm Wanjiko Mwaura.
With me, Jane Ayeko Kumet. Remember, we are also live on Facebook, so do join the conversation where you have a chance to get a little more than what we are covering on radio.
That's right. Now, we start with Kenyan doctors who are up in arms over the government to employ Cuban doctors.
Why do we need strangers who do not know the cultural nuances in place in Kenya, who have not gone through the Kenyan medical system? Why do we need them to come and build our capacity?
And we shall also hear about the conviction of the sole surviving suspect in the 2015 Paris terror attack. But first, here is a chance to hear some of the stories shaping the world today.
This is Abubakar Jalo with the DW News. The last remaining suspect in the 2015 Paris attacks, Saleh Abdeslam, has been found guilty of attempted terrorist murder in a separate case in Brussels and was sentenced to 20 years in prison. The trial surrounds a shootout with police in the Belgian capital in March 2016. DW correspondent Terry Schulz has more from Brussels.
For Belgium, this was important because, of course, the entire country has been called a failed state and received a lot of criticism for being the headquarters of this terror cell that committed such heinous crimes in Paris and later also attacked, of course, our airport and metro here in Brussels. And this is the only part of those crimes that Saleh Abdeslam is implicated in that will be held here in Belgium because he will be tried in Paris. So for Belgium, it was important that they had their piece of justice.
Angolan President João Lourenço has sacked the chief of staff of the armed forces and the head of the Foreign Intelligence Agency on Monday. General Geraldo Sashipengo Nunda, the head of the armed forces, has been named by prosecutors last month as a suspect in a $50 billion corruption investigation. This is President Lourenço's latest move against officials tainted by graft allegations or links to his president, José Eduardo dos Santos. This news comes to you from DW, Germany's international broadcaster. Pope Francis has decided to celebrate his Saint's Day, buying 3,000 ice creams for the homeless and other people, the Vatican said on Monday. In the Catholic calendar, April 23rd marked St. George's Day and the Pope was born in Argentina more than 81 years ago as Jorge, which means George, Mario Bergoglio. Germany's oldest party, the Social Democrat or SPD, has elected a woman for the first time as its new leader. Andrea Nahles won by a disappointing margin of votes, but she is expected to stay at the party after years as a junior partner in a coalition government with Chancellor Angela Merkel's Christian Democrats CDU party. Nahles spoke directly about her agenda in her victory speech.
Many people know the glass ceiling that women are always faced with. Today, at this party conference, we've broken the glass ceiling within the SPD party. And it will stay this way, ladies and gentlemen.
The European Union's Trade Commissioner Cecilia Malmström has said that German Chancellor Angela Merkel and French President Emmanuel Macron will press US President Donald Trump this week to exempt the EU permanently from Washington's steel and aluminium tariffs. The United States and the EU are holding high-level talks to address this issue. Macron arrived in Washington on Monday, while Merkel travels there on Thursday. For more stories, go to our website at dw.com or download the DW app from your Google Play Store or iTunes. I am Abubakar Jalo.
You're listening to DW's Africa Link program with me, Jane Ayeko Kemet.
And I'm Wanjiko Mwaura. Thanks to all of you who are listening to us on Facebook. Don't forget to leave us your comments and, of course, share this audio. Now, Kenya's public healthcare system has been facing turbulent times from constant long strikes that have left thousands seeking expensive healthcare services in private hospitals to mass corruption, seeing millions of dollars meant to boost Kenya's poor health system vanish without a trace.
Now, the latest ailment in Kenya's health system is that government has fired 96 nurses who were on strike in central Kenya. Unemployed doctors are equally crying foul after the government decided to go forward with a controversial plan to hire medics from Cuba. From Nairobi, DW's Andrew Wasike tells us more.
Despite the tremendous progress that Kenya has made in improving maternal and child health, or the treatment of communicable diseases such as malaria, tuberculosis and HIV and AIDS, the doctor-to-patient ratio still stands at 1 to 16,000 people. To reduce this gap, the government has decided to recruit doctors from Cuba, a move that has angered unemployed specialized Kenyan doctors. I spoke to a couple of well-trained, qualified Kenyan doctors who wish to remain anonymous. They cry foul, saying that over 1,000 medics in Kenya with the same qualifications are unemployed.
It seems by the evidence provided to us, our country doesn't need us.
I've done the registration, I have my license ready, I have my retention certificate ready. All I'm waiting for is employment. As a well-educated doctor, a student who worked so hard to get to where I am, I knew I had automatic posting. I knew at this time I'd be employed. I knew at this time I'd be able to provide for my family, but it's all but a dream at the moment.
The other thing I expected was that I would lead a decent lifestyle, that I would not have to be struggling to look for a job. Rather, I would be comfortable, able to meet my needs, my basic needs and those of my family.
The medics are wondering why the Kenyan government is committing huge resources to import doctors while they are still on the streets searching for employment. The Kenya Medical Practitioners and Dentists Board Secretary General Ouma Oluga says that bringing foreign doctors to Kenya will not cure what ails the country's healthcare system.
When we are bringing doctors from outside, it means that we don't want to solve the problem. It means that we are creating employment for other countries and using our budget to create foreign direct investment for another country. And as such, we do condemn, and we are saying that with the current system of healthcare, the Cuban doctors will be frustrated.
But the government has been quick to defend its decision to import Cuban doctors, saying that under a partnership with the Cuban government, it will bring in specialists in areas of medicine which are in high demand, such as oncology, nephrology, and dermatology. Health Minister Cecily Kariuki says that the underlying objective of the partnership is to build expertise and capacities at Kenya's grassroots level 4 and 5 hospitals.
These 100 gentlemen and ladies who will be coming to work in Kenya will be coming to do two things. One, to plug a very obvious gap in terms of the specialized care. They will also be helping with capacity building.
As access to healthcare remains expensive, with corruption swallowing millions of dollars meant to pay doctors and purchase medicine, Sheila Maonga, a medical expert, shares her views on Kenya's latest move to improve its healthcare system.
Why do we need strangers who do not know the cultural nuances in place in Kenya, who have not gone through the Kenyan medical system? Why do we need them to come and build our capacity? So why don't we fill these gaps with our own people? There must be a political decision somewhere there why we chose Cuba and not any other country. But the whole thing is just wrong, it's immoral, it's unethical.
That report was filed by Andrew Wasike in Nairobi. Now, Wajiko, honestly, with the East African Federation, why didn't you come to Uganda to find some doctors?
Well, we would have loved to, but listen to this comment from Mbazira Dean from Kampala, Uganda. And he writes, the healthcare system in Uganda is so expensive and inefficient. There's no value for money and there's too much liberalization. We lack a health insurance policy that can avail medical care to citizens. So perhaps it's, like you rightly said, a community problem that we ought to look into together.
Maybe
first.
It's not a bad idea for the community, for the Federation to look into this issue as a community and not just as Kenya. Well, that's not all. Ferrari Masuku from Zimbabwe says the same plight is faced by the nurses in Zimbabwe. Africans must arise and get rid of poor governance.
And actually, to bring you up to speed, we have been covering the situation in Zimbabwe, and thousands of Zimbabwean nurses returned to work today after ending a strike. And this is because of fresh negotiations that are expected to continue.
Anjiku, like we are just saying, could this be an East African problem or something politics? It's interesting to hear from Charles Ongole John from Kampala, who says Museveni also had indicated firing Ugandan doctors and hiring Cubans again at the height of the medical strike recently. He backed away after realizing his NRM government was too broke to hire anyone, let alone foreign labor.
Well, we will leave it at that for now as we move on to our top story world.
Yes.
A court in Brussels has convicted and sentenced the only surviving suspect in the 2015 Paris terror attacks, Salah Abdeslam, and his co-accused Sofiane Ayari to 20 years in prison.
Yes, that's true. And I caught up with our Brussels correspondent, Terry Scholz, and she brought us up to date with what the verdict means for Brussels and the European Union.
This stems from an incident several days before Salah Abdeslam was arrested, when law enforcement personnel found him by surprise hiding in a safe house with Sofiane Ayari and another man who was killed at the scene. When police knocked on the door, not expecting anyone to be home, they were met by heavy weapons fire. Three of them were injured. And although Salah Abdeslam and Sofiane Ayari escaped out the back door, a third man was killed there. And when law enforcement personnel went in, they found Kalashnikovs, tons of ammunition, and Islamic State propaganda. So the judge went through all of these details in justifying her conviction on attempted terrorist murder.
Do we expect an appeal from the convicted person?
It's very hard to see them being too worried about this 20-year sentence when he's facing much more serious charges in the deaths of 129 people as part of the ring that launched the terror attacks in Paris in November 2015.
How significant is this for Paris as well as EU in fighting terrorism?
For Belgium, this was important because, of course, the entire country has been called a failed state and received a lot of criticism for being the headquarters of this terror cell that committed such heinous crimes in Paris and later also attacked, of course, our airport and metro here in Brussels. And this is the only part of those crimes that Salah Abdeslam is implicated in that will be held here in Belgium because he will be tried in Paris. So for Belgium, it was important that they had their piece of justice.
I was speaking to DW's Terry Scholz in Brussels.
And now, moving from Brussels back to the African continent, in Madagascar, where protests against new electoral laws have been rocking the capital. Supporters of opposition politician Marc Ravalomanana, a former president, says the new electoral laws are designed to block him from running in the elections.
Opposition supporters continue to voice their grievances. Earlier, the country's defense minister appealed to politicians to find an outcome that would avoid violence. Ajit Niranajan reports.
Thousands of demonstrators marched in Antananarivo earlier today, protesting new electoral laws and the death of one protester in a similar march over the weekend. The opposition supporters, most of whom were dressed in white, claim the new legislations are designed to block former President Marc Ravalomanana from running in this year's election. The electoral laws in question include how to govern the electoral system, voting for the president and members of the National Assembly. Ravalomanana, who was ousted in a 2009 coup, has teamed up with the man who succeeded him, Andy Rajoelina, to oppose the laws pushed by the current leadership. The opposition leaders are also challenging provisions on campaign financing and access to media.
Ajit Niranjan brought us that report. Now let's have a quick look at what people are talking about on Facebook about our top story, Kenya.
First of all, I'd like to acknowledge Abdullahi Jalo, who says hi. Hi, Abdullahi. Where are you listening to us from? Let us know in the comment section also what you think of the reports that we have already run. I also see Ma Mbole, who says hello. Lots of greetings here. And Mohamed Mukaila also listening in to Africa Link. And to bring you up to speed, we did ask the question, how is the healthcare system faring in your country?
And Mpelenga Nathaniel from Nigeria says Nigeria's own healthcare system is the worst.
And something that's interesting, Charles said that Cuban doctors are the best, ne?
Yeah, that's what they are saying. But those are not our comments, but rather the comments of our listeners. And you too can join the conversation, and we shall bring them as and when we can. Welcome back to the program. My name is Jane Ayeko Kumet.
And I'm Wanjiko Mwaura.
In this part of the program, 8 years after a program to tackle infant and maternal mortality in Sierra Leone, what do mothers say about the program?
The medicines are not available. And normally, they refer us to pharmacies to buy these medicines, which are costly.
And not to forget our sports segment with Samson Omale. But first, be it for family support, paying school fees for siblings, or enterprise, remittances from immigrants back to their home countries are key to supporting the economies of many poor countries.
Now, the World Bank predicts an upside trend after estimates reached $466 billion in 2017, an increase of about 8.5% over $429 billion in 2016. So, what does this tell us about the role of African diaspora in the development of their continent? I put this question to Ayo Johnson, Director of Viewpoint Africa, based in London. Take a listen.
Well, it shows that the diaspora communities around the world are really energized. They're making a lot of money and they're willing to share that money with their respective countries from where they first came from. In fact, these volumes of transactions that we're seeing, they are literally keeping some of these smaller nations, their economies alive. Clearly, remittance is a huge business and clearly not going to go away.
Clearly not going to go away, and something that is keeping the African economies at large. Is this something that African government should exploit?
Well, exploit, in fact, if they're not careful, it will dictate whether they stay in power or not, because their diaspora communities, if those respective governments on the African continent or around the world don't engage with those communities to show appreciation, if those communities stop sending money, those economies could collapse and in turn affect those governments.
Now, the success of these remittances is highly attributed to technological development. But at the same time, we know that most countries in Africa have relatively low technological development, which sometimes makes the whole money transfer system quite costly. What can be done to make it more effective and cost-friendly?
Well, the interface has always been a problem. Sometimes the technological gap between developed countries from where this money is coming from on the developed countries where they're going, you find that the transactions are usually delayed, strained, and at huge costs to those who are sending them. So I think as we move on and the dividing line and gap between the developed and the underdeveloped in terms of technology narrows, then I'll expect those costs for shifting those huge volumes of transactions from the diaspora into those countries in terms of remittance would reduce significantly.
Whereas there is a lot of movement among Africans within the continent, we also know that the bigger contribution of the money also comes from the Western world. Talk about the US and Europe, and of course other parts of the continent. Now, there is also at the same time, there's quite a lot of effort from the European Union, from the US, to send back migrants to their home and also to deter migration. If this continues, that means at one point in time, we are likely to see fewer African diaspora. How would this translate into this remittance that the continent is looking up to?
You're right. On one hand, if the Western countries say they do not want immigrants to come to their country, then that in itself would impinge significantly on the ability of that population in terms of diaspora and population to be able to pass on remittance back. And of course, until the developed countries stop putting these restraints on immigration, I'm afraid those who can send money would dwindle, would reduce, and the impact on the smaller economies of the world who are dependent on remittance money coming through would be adversely affected.
I was speaking to Ayo Johnson, Director of Viewpoint Africa, based in London.
And we did ask you on our Facebook page, do you receive any remittances and what do you use them for? And do you usually get all the money that is sent? Well, we did receive your answer.
Interesting question there. But first of all, there's one person who sent us a comment without without his name, and he's of the view that it's high time Africans got other means to develop their own continent to avoid exploitation by the Europeans.
Well, another one here from Kennedy from Ghana who says, I don't have immediate family abroad to send me money, school fees, healthcare expenses, funeral, capital projects, etc. I think this is what he would use the remittances for if he had family abroad.
Because then he says, I do everything on my own. David Ayopong from Ghana says, I do not know if the question of what I use the money for is right, but here in Ghana, I receive all the money I get and everything from the bank.
And Ibrahim Jallo in Gambia says he receives remittances for family support, sometimes for school fees and daily affairs, and that he received the same amount the sender sends. You know, this brings up the issue of foreign currency exchange,
yes,
and how if you're sending money from one currency to another, you sometimes tend to lose because of the differences in the exchange depending on the international market values and different other factors. But also, some banks or platforms for sending money back home do charge you a service fee.
Yes.
Whether you're sending the money to a mobile account or to a bank account, you still get to pay a little more.
Well, Wanjiku, there is no free service in the world. It's maybe fair that we pay. The question is, how much should we pay? Keep those comments coming. And as we already indicated, DW Africa Link is also live on Facebook. So do join the conversation there and we shall certainly read some of your comments if time allows us.
Health check.
In April 2010, Sierra Leone launched a free health initiative for breastfeeding mothers, pregnant women, and children under the age of five. The program was launched in response to an alarming high mortality and morbidity levels among Sierra Leonean children.
The removal of health user fees through this program has saved many lives, but the initiative has faced some serious challenges as well. Exactly 8 years after the initiative was launched, our correspondent Mutala Mohamed Kamara went to find out how the initiative has been faring on.
Sierra Leone's maternal and infant mortality rate was consistently ranked as one of the world's highest before the Free Healthcare Initiative was launched in 2010. According to the country's Demographic and Health Survey of 2008, infant mortality used to be 89 deaths per 1,000 births, and maternal mortality was at 857 deaths per 100,000 births. Sierra Leone's government, with support from donor partners, launched the initiative in an effort to improve maternal and infant mortality rate in the country. Dr. Ruth Taylor, who works for the Oladurin Children's Hospital, where the program was launched, said the initiative has decreased the infant mortality rate.
Well, the infant mortality rate is reduced. And that's the idea of free healthcare, especially primary healthcare, because kids that could have died 8 years back now live. They now survive, they now thrive, they now continue. We help the malnourished kids back in the day will die and they'll think it's some witchcraft. Now they live, they survive, they go to be wonderful adults.
Although the country is still ranked among the highest for infant mortality rate, significant improvement has been made. The infant mortality rate, which was at 86.3 deaths per 1,000 live births in 2015, has dropped to 80.7 deaths per 1,000 live births in 2017. Dr. Taylor said the availability of free healthcare is just one aspect to reduce the infant mortality rate.
Another huge challenge we face is the mindset of the people, because the idea of primary health care is to prevent an illness or to treat it on the onset so that it doesn't escalate. But if down there at home, somebody is thinking, my baby is sick, I can just buy some drugs from a peddler or in a pharmacy, then free health care is not going anywhere.
For the mothers benefiting from the program, the challenges are different. Aisha Ture, a mother of three, shares her experience.
I'm a mother of three, and I've benefited from the Free Healthcare Initiative. The only problem is
the medicines are not available. And normally, they refer us to pharmacies to buy these medicines, which are costly. And also, the nurses, their attitudes are not favorable. And most times, they request for money from us, even though we need their attendance to our kids. And the doctors, when we go, they are not even around. They normally take their time with this private clinic and hospitals that pay them much than the government hospitals. And we want to see that change.
The public relations officer of the Ministry of Health and Sanitation, Solomon Rogers, said government is doing everything to address some of the challenges.
But government is doing everything it can to ensure that drugs are available in all the community health facilities across the board. And at the same time, the government is doing its best to improve on the human resource capacity by training community health workers and other medical staff across the board.
Although the government has invested greatly in upgrading of medical facilities, equipment, civil society groups who have been monitoring the Free Healthcare Initiative say more needs to be done on the availability of drugs and the human resources.
Mutala Muhammad Kamara presented that report. Now, on to sport. Mohamed Salah is possibly the finest player the English Premier League has produced this season. The Egyptian footballer was in January named CAF Player of the Year following his top-notch performance for his club Liverpool and country Egypt. He was again named the English Premier League Player of the Year by players in the league. All that and a lot more in this sports roundup with Samson O'Malley.
It's an honor to be nominated for the Player of the Year in the Premier League, you know, and especially because it's voted by the players. So I'm very happy and very proud to win it.
We stay with England and the announcement that the 22-year reign of Arsenal manager Arsene Wenger will come to an end at the end of this season continues to dominate discussions among football fans in Africa. So is the world of sports. Persons come and go. Former Tottenham Hotspur manager Christian Gross has been named as the new head coach of Egyptian giant Zamalek. Christian Gross becomes the club's 24th coach since Mortada Mansour took over as Zamalek president in 2014. The Swiss coach succeeds Ehab Galal, who was sacked earlier this month. Down to the London Marathon, where Kenya's Eliud Kipchoge and Vivian Cheruiyot survived very warm conditions and an ambitious early pace to win the 38th Virgin Money London Marathon on Sunday. Eliud Kipchoge won the London Marathon for the third time on Sunday in a time of 2 hours, 4 minutes, 17 seconds. Shara Kitata Tola of Ethiopia was second, followed by Mo Farah of Britain. Kipchoge, who skipped last year's race to attempt a sub-2-hour marathon in Italy, could not break Dennis Kimato's world record as high temperatures made running conditions difficult in the English capital.
This is a wonderful race. I'm happy to actually win London for the third time. And on the top of it, I won a world marathon majors. So it's a big day. I can say it is actually, it's a big day in my heart and in my mind. I can't complain about conditions. Because all the participants were running on the same conditions, on the same arena, and I'm happy for the win, and I'm happy for the cause and for the crowd in London.
Women's favourite Mary Kitiani attempted to break Paula Radcliffe's mixed race record assisted by male pacemakers, but the Kenyan struggled late on in the race, eventually finishing fifth and unable to add to her 3 London titles. That allowed for a surprise victory for Vivian Cheruiyot, who took her first London crown in 2 hours, 18 minutes, 31 seconds, having won her first career marathon in Frankfurt only in October.
It means a lot for me because it has shown that I'm going to run better in marathon like that, what I did at the track and field. To run 218, I was targeting something like 220, but I was feeling comfortable. And I'm so happy today to be a London Marathon winner. It's not easy.
That was a report by Samson O'Malley, our sports correspondent, who always gives us a roundup of the sports events in the continent and beyond.
Yes, indeed. And just quickly, Jane, before we go, we have a comment on Sierra Leone. As someone who forgot to leave their name says, the program may be to help, but if the creator of the program does not follow up to make sure the funds and other resources are used accordingly, then it's just a waste of time. And he or she is referring to the report of the program in Sierra Leone to reduce infant mortality rate.
Sierra Leone is fighting to reduce mortality infant rates. The Kenyans are importing Cuban doctors. In Zimbabwe, the nurses are on strike. So much happening from the continent. And we here in Africa Link promise to keep you up to date with everything that's happening on the continent.
From us, me, Wenjiko Mwaura.
And me, Jane Ayeka Kume. That's all we had time for. We shall be here tomorrow. Goodbye.